Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Steph, and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. And if you're listening to this around the time it comes out, it's nearly Christmas. Before we get started, it's pretty crackers out there with postal strikes, icy weather, and general Christmas frenzy. And if you're looking for brilliant gifts where you can handpick beautiful products to put together in a really tailored, personal way, please come and have a look at my gift company, Don't Buy Her Flowers. Our gifts are all about encouraging the recipient to take a bit of time for themselves, which is definitely needed at Christmas. And we have gifts for men, kids and teens, as well as women, so you can get everyone ticked off the list in one place. We're planning to keep taking orders up until the 23rd of December, and our couriers have been doing amazingly keeping up currently. But because of all the issues mentioned and some areas have backlogs, I would say crack on and order as soon as possible if you want to definitely have those gifts arriving by Christmas Day. Then you can sit back, maybe get Circling Your Radio Times. God, do you remember when Christmas was all about plotting TV viewing and snaffling food that other people made for you? Those were great times. My guests today actually have some sensible thoughts on Christmas, which is to not go too crazy trying to do everything and make it magical like you might see on social media, because it's not real anyway. Today's episode is with Victoria Eames and Laura Belbin, who you might know as Knee Deep in Life, and they are massive on social media with hundreds of thousands of followers, and they create videos and content mostly taking the piss out of themselves and motherhood, and there's a lot of being daft and disgusting. And they have the No Holes Barred podcast together, where they do all of that a lot. But as you'll hear in this episode, they also are really thoughtful and can be emotional. And we talk about how they got into these careers, where they have books and a stage show and generate a lot on Instagram, as well as all the kind of tougher challenges they've each faced. We talk about motherhood and handling social media. And also, we'll take you on an emotional roller coaster reflecting on 2022, talking heroes, villains, you may be able to guess who that was, crushes and triumphs. I actually met Laura and Victoria a little while ago, and it was lovely to see how genuine their friendship is. They do really like each other, and it's lovely that they've gone and done these separate things and then they've come together and created a whole other thing. But thank you to Resi Design for sponsoring this episode. Resi is an architectural platform whose aim it is to simplify the process of extension projects and take the homeowner's idea to build. And we'll talk more about them later in the episode. Okay, hold on for some smut, obviously some poo and bum chat, and hearing three women do what women do when we get together, which is having a lovely time covering a whole spectrum of emotions and topics, starting with what the hell did they do before regularly getting half naked online for a living? Do you know what I want to talk about first? So you both obviously do lots of daft stuff on Instagram.
Yeah.
What did you do before you did this?
Hilariously, we both worked in like administrative roles. So I worked in a school as support staff. I was the communications manager. So there was like elements of it that were creative. Certainly no humour though, other than just being my hilarious self.
Same, exactly the same. An exceptionally boring admin job. I'd done it for 14 years and it was just convenient. It was round the corner, but I hated it.
And then you both accidentally started posting stuff and people liked it.
I still don't really know what an influencer is.
No.
And I was so shit at it that I started it on Facebook and then somebody was like, why don't you do it on Instagram? And I was like, I don't know. So I then started Knee Deep in Life on Instagram, but I thought you had to post different things across both platforms. So I would create content on Instagram,
right,
content on Facebook. I mean, I don't even know how or why I did it that way. I made it so difficult for myself. And then it took quite a while. And then I was like, oh, it's just the same. I just do the same across both platforms. So, yeah. But I always wanted to be big. Who am I fucking kidding? Of course I did.
Yeah, I didn't.
I'm such an egomaniac.
Yeah, it was totally accidental as well. But it was sheerly, is that even a word? Sheerly. It was out of sheer boredom that I started my Instagram account because I was on maternity leave with my son. Weirdly, mine was not humour at first. It was interiors. It wasn't like me. And I had big plans of like doing, you know, tutorials and YouTube and the rest of it. Just literally because I was so lonely and I had no friends and I had a 6-month-old baby and was like, kill me now. And it became like a escapism completely. But the humour element of it was that back then, 6 years ago, it was all about stills, images, not video, and captions, wasn't it? So I used to like really, really put so much thought and effort into what I was writing and make that comedic that was about my life as a mum and having a kid and all the rest of it, and a lot of as well about my husband at the expense of my husband. And it seemed to resonate more with people than my house, but the account still grew. I don't know whether it was the pictures or the captions or what, but for me, it was like, I loved that humour side of it. And soon the pictures just became a bit redundant, really. It was like, it's the same old fucking photos of my house. It's boring. And then stories started, didn't they? I just used to chat loads of shit on there. And I almost like enjoyed the stories more, I think. And then when I was pregnant with Edith, that's when I did my first ever like funny video. And it went bonkers, and it was like, oh, okay, there's something in this, I think. And then gradually it was just like a slow sort of like fading out the interior stuff, and it just solely became video. And then obviously Reels kicked in, and that was it then, wasn't it? Then we're all fucking slaves to the Reels.
Do your neighbors know what you do for a living?
Oh, they must.
I feel like I've got complete anonymity here. Like, no one fucking knows who I am. I love it. Like, no one at the school gates knows who I am. It's just brilliant. I love it.
A massive part of the podcast is the stories that people send you in, right? A couple of the ones that made me die. So one was about the kid who found one of Daddy's hairs and he put it in his pocket to take to school. A pube in his pocket.
A pube, yeah.
He took to school. But the other one was grandma had made a chicken soup. They're all sitting around to eat the chicken soup. And then she says, oh, it's pretty good given it's a week old.
Yeah.
Can you remember what happened next with the granddad?
Yeah. He projectile vomited and shit, didn't it, at the same time? And they all ended up with like the most horrific fucking salmonella poisoning. Yeah,
that was good. That. What's your favourite?
It's got to be the most recent one, the turd baguette or the fanny fire of doom.
Yeah, the fucking turd baguette was absolutely brilliant. That was...
But then equally, so is Vic's story of her shitting on the school toilet seat. I mean, those three are my top three.
Sorry, what happened?
So when I was about, when I was in secondary school, so it was like my first ever party in year seven. And I used to, like, I had a really weird, I never ate. And so I never shit. When I was younger. So it would go like, I don't know, 5 or 6 days without doing a poo. And then when it came, it was like, no, this is happening. And it would also be a gigantic rock hard log because I hadn't eaten anything really. So it was just like complete constipation. And I was at a party and there was like this rickety door, which was kind of like, I don't know, like made out of wicker or something. Like it couldn't close properly. And I had to go to the toilet. So I went to the toilet, but they were mucking around outside and they turned the light off. And in my panic, I didn't know what was going on, couldn't see anything. So I just like flushed the toilet and then got up and went to go out, opened the door, and they're like, what's that on the toilet seat?
Oh.
I left a massive fucking log on the toilet seat and literally had to run back and like punch it back into the loo and be like, it's a chocolate log, it's a chocolate mini roll, it's a joke. And I'm gonna say no one believed me, but there you go.
Oh, you would have been like 11.
Yeah, it was truly humiliating.
Made for a
great story.
Fantastic story.
And then the funny farter of doom was just someone that was on one of those fairground rides that spins round, the gravity ones where you like get stuck to the wall, and she just kept
But she was on her period. She had a really heavy period.
Yeah, that's it. And she was
she
just
couldn't
like
stop funny farting.
She couldn't stop queefing the whole
wet
the
funny
whole
fart.
Ride. It's just the visual.
Oh my God.
It's so funny.
Yeah, we do get some exceptionally amazing stories from listeners. They're amazing. But like without them, the podcast wouldn't, it would exist, but it would just be Vic and I randomly talking about shit.
Which that's what we do anyway.
Some of that as well. Yeah. Are you currently balls deep in Christmas? How is it looking?
I don't think I buy into the whole concept of doing loads and loads of things over Christmas. So that's just really helpful to not feel that sense of overwhelm.
I really fucking love Christmas. I love celebrating just generally everything anyway. But this year, no, I'm not ready for it. I just think my head's not in it at all. I don't even have fucking sellotape in the house, let alone wrapping paper or anything else. So I have next week before my kids go on holiday to get my shit together, which I can guarantee I won't do. So
yeah, I haven't wrapped any presents yet or anything like that, but I'm not worried about it. It's one of those things that you just do over the course of a couple of evenings, isn't it? And we don't go mad, like we don't go crazy with the kids, because I just think it's wasteful, really.
Well, yours are still quite little, aren't they? And they'll be so excited by anything that's wrapped up.
Like, exactly, they are.
Because how old is your eldest, Steph?
12.
Yeah, so Elliot's going to be 12 next month. We're kind of in the same boat.
How's secondary school going?
Yeah, good, actually.
Yeah, it's just
really
different.
Good. It is so different, but he's doing really good. He's doing really good. It's actually, it's been a welcomed relief in comparison to how worried I was in the lead up to. He's thriving. I mean, I'm up the school's arsehole. That's where I was this morning permanently, but that's how you get shit done, isn't it? You've got to be that parent. I am that parent. I mean, some people might call me the helicopter mum, but it's like, if my child needs something, I will literally walk over hot coals to get it.
Well, secondary school's weird because you're not given all the information. You're suddenly cut out of the loop compared to primary school, where there's a lot of information.
I actually went and met Elliot's tutor, and I said to her there was an incident that had happened, and I said, "Look, I'm going to put it to you like this: it either gets dealt with, or I fucking come into the school windmilling." I said, "So, which way would you like it to go?" And she went, "I think I'd like you to come into school windmilling, actually." I was like, "That can be arranged." Luckily, she's got a good sense of humour. But I just think you've got to be a little bit gung-ho, especially as your kids get older, because parents are meant to take a bit more of a back seat. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I can't do it." So anally retentive, I think it's called. Control freak. There's so many different words that describe me.
I think December is just a bit crackers, and it sounds good that you've both kind of gone, this is how we're going to do it. Probably the last couple of years as well of not being able to do all of the stuff. Yeah. You know, this is more enjoyable.
I personally think that social media is like the biggest ball bag in our lives with regards to that. And obviously both Vic and I are like anti that, and we are very much the reality. Like all my fucking Halloween pumpkins are still outside my front door, so I don't know what to do with them. But the thing is that we're not seeing that. And like, God knows Vic and I fall to it on so many occasions of that self-comparison. And we're in this business where we go, shit, we're not enough. We're not good enough. We're not this enough. We're not that enough. And that self-comparison is so awful. And I feel like because social media, like TikTok and, you know, like, being a professional fucking hired girlfriend, like that's a thing now on TikTok, of like how to make your partner's house perfect and how to provide them with a perfect breakfast before they start their day. And I just think, fucking hell, like what ideas are we pumping out into society? And it's still that the very archaic keeping up with the Joneses, but it's just done in a very different way.
In the way that it feels like you can't really avoid it anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because the only way you and who's going to not go on social media? It's our lives, right? I mean, what else am I going to do? Speak to my husband. you know, it's really hard, and it's really hard to remove yourself from that because it's literally fucking everywhere. I mean, Vic and I, we take great pleasure in conversations where we're like, fucking hell,
have you seen this? Have you seen this?
The insane things that people are doing.
Yeah, and yeah. I think it's just too much, isn't it? And the problem is that you can really lose perspective and genuinely believe that, like, every moment of that person's life is like that, which isn't the reality at all. And it's not going to be, because it isn't, you know, it's just, that's a fact. No one's life is picture perfect all the time.
If you're stopping to take a picture as well, like, because are your husbands on social media?
Not publicly.
Yeah, not publicly. Yeah.
So, and Doug isn't. And I think that really helps, because if you go, oh, can you get a picture of this? And it's like at a really daft time, like you're having a genuine family moment, or I don't know, the two of you are having an actual moment. They're like, what? Because it makes no sense. Whereas you can't, that perspective thing, you can be like, oh, but that would have made a really good picture. It's like, no, that was meant to be an actual life.
I think partly maybe because my career is like on social media, I always forget to take photos. I'm never thinking about taking photos when we're doing things or when we're having a nice time with the kids. And I get really fucked off if Rob's got his phone out, because I'm just like, no, what are you doing? Like, put your phone away. This is about us now. And, let's take a picture of it. I'm like, no, just be in the moment. I think people have really, they've lost the ability to do that, you know?
I'm a little bit the other way. I'm not quite on the same page as Vic. Like, if we go out, I won't have my phone. It's just in my pocket if we go for walks or whatever. But I don't have many, snapshot memories of my upbringing. Like, there's very few photos, because obviously it's the 80s. And any videos are all of my older siblings. And not me.
They get bored by the third one, mate.
Yeah, I've got three. And there's not one picture. This is dreadful. Frank's five. There's not one picture on the wall.
Toby.
We did it all with the younger ones. And then we've got pictures, obviously, but we just haven't quite got Anne to bring them up. Yeah. We have said, Doug said the other day, I think we need to rectify that, really.
We had the exact same issue where we only had pictures of Elliot around the house and Toby was about five. And it was like, God, we should do something. And now there's one in the hallway where he's next to Elliot.
Yeah,
but we don't have many like actual pictures in our house anyway. It's more like artworky type stuff. But I think that for that reason, I've been a little bit more conscious that I want to be able to make those memories, because I don't know whether it's because of the way that my brain works, I really, 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 really love pictures of anything, of anyone. I don't care. I will sit and look through them. I find all of it lovely and it all tells a story and a memory. Mm. So I'm very different, but I won't take loads of pictures. I've learned to chill out a little bit and not do it. I think I lived in fear of missing the memory, while in actual fact, I wasn't part of the memory, because I was desperately trying to capture it to be able to look back at it, if that makes sense.
It's a fine balance, isn't it? It's a fine balance.
And I will sit on so many evenings, I will sit and literally just go back to pictures and videos of them when they were little. In fact, all of us do, and we'll sit and look at them. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like that really precious. It's fucking not.
No, but it's also the fuckery of being a mum.
Yeah.
Now you've got a 12-year-old, this bit is going to be challenging, but I hate it. I hate it when people go, oh, you don't know, it's just going to get harder. You're like, well, that's really helpful. I still, at this point, swear that the younger bit, that first bit, was dreadful.
Agreed.
And so hard.
Totally agree with you.
Because you didn't know who you were. So at least now, they might be really hard, but I feel more like I'm...
It's not even a fucking scratch on what it's like to have a newborn baby.
No.
Or a three-year-old.
And the sleep and all the inconsistencies and beating yourself up and the guilt and the shame, blah, 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 all that. Because you do get kinder to yourself.
It's the stupid shit of like, oh my God, when should I wean them? Oh my God, they've not sat up yet. And oh no, they haven't rolled yet. And that self-comparison, I think, is so intense, because not only have you got that social reminder of how well your child's doing, you've got bloody, what you call them? Health visitors, and they do the 1 year review or whatever the fuck it is. There's a continual comparison of, well, your child hasn't hit those benchmarks yet. And I think that the early stages of parenthood, and that's not just the early months, I think it's the early years, is excruciating. If someone were to go, would you take them back to when they were little? I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm all right.
But you look at pictures and go, oh God, they were delicious. Like, yeah, absolutely. Hands and all that stuff. So that is why it's so weird. Yeah. But yeah, do you remember the weigh-ins, the fear? Oh, we had one where Doug and I, for whatever reason, we'd left the house at different times. And I think he had the baby, and this is my first, and I'm like running behind him. And we were trying to get there on time, so we were late. So I think I was like, go, just go, go. Like, I was so desperate to get him away because he was underweight and they were worried about him and he'd lost too much weight and all that stuff because he was born early and like it wasn't feeding properly. And then I lost him. I didn't know where I was going or something. And I like ran into a local community centre going like, and it was the wrong place. And like, can I use your phone? Because I was trying to phone him. I'd forgotten my phone. It was just so much chaos. And then like, we got there. And they said, oh, you're too late. It was like, oh, finished at 10:45 and it was 10:46. And I just stood there sobbing.
Yeah.
But those weigh-ins used to be so intense. And actually, it's like, if you look at the baby and they look okay, which he did, but because we'd had a bit like struggle at the beginning, I was just so stressed by it all.
Yeah. And also, at that point, it's the sleep deprivation. It absolutely fries your fucking brain. Yeah. It fries it. You can't be rational. And so something like that normally that you would probably be able to handle, you just can't because you don't actually have the like neurological capability to be like, let's see this as it actually is. Everything just gets, you know.
We'll come back tomorrow maybe or next
week. Yeah.
I mean, mine hasn't come back and I'm 7 years down the line. So I think I'm fucked really.
At this point last year, I was probably at my lowest ebb with sleep. We moved house, and when we moved house, it totally fucked my daughter's sleep. So she was 2 when we moved here.
Is this when she was waking at like 4:30?
Oh my God.
Starting the day.
Yeah.
I think I remember you posting just being like,
it was fucking chaos. And not only that, it also wasn't helped by the fact that I did work with 2 sleep consultants and they both said she's the most difficult child that they'd ever worked with. And it was kind of like, oh, right, okay, so that's it then. This is my fucking life, is it? But then, we started a really alternative sleep school in December last year. And it changed our lives like within 2 weeks. But just that point of getting to that point of being like, I can't actually do this anymore because she was waking up and she was being awake in the night for like 1.5 hours, screaming solidly for 1.5 hours. There's no consoling her, even if you're in there with her. And then she was awake for the day at 5 and it was just like, this is mental. But I can just, I think there were so many moments where I thought, I just deeply regret ever making the choice to become a mother.
You
know what, I think if no parent as any parent says they haven't gone through that moment are lying, because
I can see a way out times. You know, it's like this is, she's older now, it's not like a baby where you think, oh, this is naturally going to get better. It's just what's like, gonna happen gonna happen. Oh, it's horrible. But it was all resolved with the sleep school because they were amazing. And she's been fine ever since then. She still has her moments, but generally all round compared to what it was, it's like, we're in a good place with it.
Yeah. Well, I've got a few friends who've got like 1-year-olds and all of them have been just constant bugs since about August.
Yeah.
And they're all just like going, like, I don't know if I can keep doing that. Like, obviously they're going to keep doing it, but they're really struggling. And also, but there's also a bit of like, how have you done this before? You have said this is quite hard, like you guys have been really honest about how hard you found it, but you can't really hear that until you're in it. And I don't think it's particularly helpful to keep saying to someone, I mean, that's another thing that people like to tell you when you're pregnant, oh, it's gonna be really hard.
I remember people saying it to me when Toby just started sleeping through. So Toby's my youngest, he just started sleeping through, I don't know, he was under 1. And somebody said to me, you wait till he hits the 9-month sleep regression, it will be awful. Great. And she said, like, my child's 18 months now and it's since 9 months, we've not had more than like 3 hours sleep or something ridiculous like that. And it just filled me with absolute fucking gut churning fear because I thought, shit, that's me. And it never happened. And I think that's the thing that really fucks me off with parenting or mothering in general, is we forget the fact that what is, as you've made a prime example, some people would prefer to have a newborn baby. Some people would prefer a toddler. Some people preferred when they're older. It's like, it's so individual. You can't sit there and say that it's going to be difficult because you found it difficult. It's shit. It's that's like expecting everybody to enjoy everything at the same time. It's impossible. No one's ever going to enjoy everything
it's
at the
like
same time.
It's like a martyrdom, isn't it?
That we
who've been there before want to let you know that they've been there before and they survived it, but it was really awful or something. But
and unless you're actually in it, you can't begin to fathom what it's like. When we had Toby, literally within 6 weeks, my liver was failing basically, and I ended up having emergency gallbladder surgery.
Blimey.
And in the weeks leading up to that, I cannot put into fucking words how horrific life, I mean, I had postnatal depression as well, it's that one ideal, but all round it was just fucking shit. And, you know, I would never think to tell somebody, oh yeah, you know, it's so shit because this is what I went through. Because it's just, I don't know, I just think it's a bit of a wanker way in which we live life now. It's like we're really quick to tell people it's going to be fucking awful with like little to no sort of insight into that person's life.
But
anyway,
there's a way of doing it as well, isn't there? Because at the end of the day, it is challenging. Like, I think every single stage of being a parent is challenging and it comes with different challenges. So you can sort of, you know, share that and say, yeah, actually, I did find it really challenging. But I think if you're going to do that, it's like the shit sandwich, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got to do a good thing, a bit of the shit, and then a good thing. So essentially you're saying, it's really fucking shit. That bit's really hard. I've been there. I went through it too, but I survived it. And, you know, I think the reassurance of it does get better and no, it won't last forever. I think I've found that. Just knowing that things won't last forever.
Gets better.
That's always the thing that I cling on to. And that everything is a phase. You know, like if you just think this is just a phase, it's fine. Yeah. It's just a fucking phase. I've not slept for 9 months. It's a phase.
Like the thing for me, I find so difficult. And I know that, you know, it's such an annoying way in which I process things is that when I'm not in it, I can give people all the logical fucking advice and be like, you know, it's not going to last forever. Mm. And then as soon as I'm in it, I'm like, this is so unfair. No one else is going through it. It's just me. I'm all alone. I hate it. It could be anything. That could be from like having a newborn baby to having piles. Like it's just, it's everything across the board. Like nobody's as weird as I am. Everything in my life is terrible. I can't cope with it when it's me. And yet when it's someone else, I'm like, this is fine.
Full of the wisdom. Yeah. I think we all do that, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really wish I was a little bit more sort of, like you said, Vic, you were like, oh, we all expect for the newborn phase to be exhausting. And I'm like, well, I wasn't. And I was really resentful when it was. I was like, this is shit. I don't want it to be this shit.
I don't think you can ever comprehend just how fucking difficult and exhausting it's going to be. But
good luck to anyone who's pregnant. Yay.
Yay.
Enjoy.
But also know that in a few years' time, you'll be looking back at all the pictures and going, oh, they were so lush.
Yeah.
When you do get there. So it does change.
I don't. I'm looking at my picture of my baby. I'm like, you look like an absolute slug.
I look like a slug.
Yeah. Or you look at them and go, oh.
You were fucking ugly.
The scabby head and
the crusty cradle
skin.
Yeah,
and that was bad. Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Resi Design, an architectural platform whose aim is to demystify what is a complex process and help people to create their dream home faster, on budget, with less drama and in a climate-friendly way. I have seen so many friends completely stressed out when doing building works and having to manage all the people and the aspects involved, like we don't have enough things and people to manage. So with Resi, not only do they assist with the architectural design and planning of a project, but also the financial aspects and sourcing experienced contractors such as structural engineers and builders, which makes them completely unique. They are also brilliantly a female-led tech startup and the UK's biggest online residential architecture firm. And they have a market-leading 93% track record in getting planning approval compared to the 80% average, which sounds excellent, as planning permission is another thing I've seen lots of people doing work to their houses get really stressed by. So if you're within the M25, you can get a renovation proposal based on a realistic budget and timeline and build your happy home with Resi.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Steph, yeah. You had three though. Like you had three.
I mean,
probably is too many.
Probably is.
I had the first two really close together, but I never was selling my stuff or passing on my stuff and saying I was done. And I'm one of six, and I think there's just something in me that wanted a big family. But that, I mean, six is too many, clearly.
Yeah. See, yeah, I get that. Chaos. I'm one of four, and I always thought I'd have four kids, and then I had two, and I was like, fucking line. That's it.
I did for a bit, but then, and I was 29 when I had Buster. But yeah, and then there's a 5-year gap between the younger two. So I did wait a bit. But Frank is gorgeous. But every now and then we go, oh, if he wasn't here now, we'd still be asleep. Because the other two are hitting that phase where they sleep.
Yeah.
Or we wouldn't have to watch Ninjago again.
Yeah.
So we like let ourselves know, oh, we fucked this a little bit. But
do you let him know?
We had his parents in, and they were like, is he always happy? You know, you're like, aww. So I know, so he's obviously worked out, right, I know. I mean, this will be therapy in 25 years' time for him. Yeah. But yeah, he just is like, always happy and performing.
That's really
well, I mean,
sweet.
Fuck, look at mine and Vic's profession. Both of our kids are definitely going to need intense therapy when they're older.
No, not Jesus Christ.
So I had some questions reflecting on the year. Are you ready for these?
Yeah.
So, I was gonna ask you, so your villain of the year, I'll kick off with that.
Mine's Matt Hancock, I think.
Do you know what I thought? I suspected.
Yeah, I mean,
can we just
make
it the whole of the Conservative Party?
Yeah, no, but him especially, because he's fucking taking the piss by going to the jungle.
Mate,
and ITV can fucking do one as well, because they've given him a platform of like, oh, let's restore him. Let's make out that he's actually a good guy. It's like, no, he's not. He is actually
me, the villain is ITV for essentially even allowing it.
Yeah.
Allowing it. I'm so disgusted in that.
I've really felt for all the people in there, because I was thinking, if you're in that intense environment, because you could see obviously when he came in that a load of them were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But you would come across as a bully if you completely cut someone out and all that stuff. And I wonder how they're dealing with that. That would be really hard. I just felt sorry for them for that bit.
Oh no.
I actually purposely didn't watch it this year.
I haven't watched it. I couldn't watch it. I generally don't watch it, to be fair, but I just think the fact that he went in the first place is like, I've seen clips of him on there, and like the shit that he's come out with, you're like, oh, shut up, you little worm. Like,
I think the thing that pisses me off the most about it is the fact that he actually managed to win over some of the general public, and you know,
I'm sorry, but I just think the majority of the population are morons.
I think a lot of it is older generation.
That's what I mean, morons.
Yeah. Fucking idiot.
The same people that gave us Brexit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Oh my God. And at the end of the day, is the majority, because that's why these things have happened. That's why the Conservative Party are in. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's the majority of people, unfortunately. But
yeah.
All right. Well,
we're in agreement. Generally speaking, I would say ITV. I would say the Conservative Party in general, because I fucking hate them. And yeah, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with everything Vic said about.
So what about hero of the year? It could be anyone. It doesn't have to be someone famous, but
mine's my dad. Because he got diagnosed with terminal leukemia in May. Yeah. Yeah. And they gave him a 6-month life expectancy and he's still going strong. Mm. And at the moment, like, as you know, as far as his health kind of goes, he's really strong and he's responded really well to all the chemo. And just like, I don't know, just watching him and my mom as well, like she'll have to be in there too, I think. But just, yeah, how they're dealing with it all. And it's been a right old bloody roller coaster, obviously, because if you're told that you're going to die. In fact, when they initially gave him the diagnosis, they said if he didn't have the chemo, it would be 2 months. So it's like those time frames are pretty intense on that. Yeah. It's like fucking hell. But yeah, he's still here. He's still going and he's still so active. He's still like being really creative because he is a creative, always has been. Still working, even still working. And yeah, just really proud of him and obviously really thankful that we get to spend Christmas together because we honestly didn't think that we were going to.
That's such a head fuck, isn't it? Like, well, and for him as well, watching him go through it, because it's not like he's not an old man, so presumably you're watching him trying to work out what's going on for himself and how he feels about it and how he communicates about it and all that stuff. But you're an adult, so you can see it as a fellow adult, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? But it's definitely made me feel like a little girl.
Yeah, but then I think that when you go back to a time when you know that you're going to lose a parent, it does make you vulnerable. And of course it's going to have an attachment to your inner child, because your inner child is going, well, I don't want to lose my dad. And that's the worst part about the grief of losing a parent, is that you do have to say goodbye, but it's not just that adult version of you, it's the little person in you as well. And there's so much on that inner child in therapy. And of course, that's going to be difficult.
What about you, Laura? Who's your hero?
Oh, I don't mean to sound cliche, but it's Vic.
No,
I do mean it, because like, and I don't shy away.
Oh my God,
from...
can I just not have any more reason to cry today, please?
Yeah. I'm not going to give you a fucking reason.
Cry.
But I was called you a cunt. That make it feel better. I don't think I've shied away from how vocal I've been about the relationship and what it's meant to me. But before I had my breakdown, I would probably, no offense, Vic, I don't think the relationship meant that much to me. I think that it was just a friendship. But then when I went through my breakdown, and I think a lot of the things that Vic had said to me in the past and our conversations, they aligned. And she gets me in a way that not a lot of other people get. And she understands. And I think because we're very similar, it was a friendship that kind of happened by chance, really. And it's something that's grown into something so much more and so much deeper. And we don't see each other very often, but she's a part of my daily life. And I honestly, like, not only just because of Knee Deep in Life, but just the general friendship that we have, I don't think I would be thriving in my job right now if I didn't have her in it. So
that's so, yeah, that's so lovely.
And you didn't say me. No, I'm joking. You've got to say your dad.
Are you dying? If you're dying, you'll be my hero.
Do you know, it is quite interesting. It must say something about the two of you, that how maybe it's like an inner confidence or something, whether you think you've got it or not, that you were able to come together and go, we'll do this stuff together. Because loads of people with what you both do might have seen each other as competitors and been like, oh, how's she? Because, you know, doing the mum stuff, all the stuff you do, you could have done. And there probably will be people who would never have approached someone else.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I think at the time that I found Laura, there was nobody else doing stuff. There probably were, but it didn't feel like it. And I certainly didn't see it. Mm. I didn't see anyone doing anything that was alternative, like outside of the normal, you know, picture perfect bollocks. Mm. And then I found Laura's account, and I don't remember how I found her. I think someone probably like had shared her on stories or something like that. And I was like, oh, who's this? And it was like instantly just fell in love with her. It was like, oh my God, who is this woman? You know, like it was like that, you know, when you find someone on Instagram, it doesn't happen that often, or like on social media, and you just instantly, you're like, fucking hell, I love them. Like they're everything they do. I think they're brilliant. They're so funny. All the messaging that she's putting out about like body positivity, anything to do with parenting. Because I see like Laura, that for me, she's massively changed my sort of relationship with body image, I think. And I really do struggle with it. I still struggle with it. And it's like it's still almost a daily internal conversation that I have to have with myself to just keep myself in check, you know?
Similar for me, but I think that's really normal if you've had issues when you're younger, that it doesn't go away. It's still there, but you have to how to go, hang on a minute, and reason. Sometimes you can do it, sometimes you can't.
It's
the same for me. I think that's the thing that I've never wanted to, and probably in the past I did put it across that way. I don't ever want it to come across like I've got my shit together. I don't think anybody thinks I've got my shit together.
I think you let us know that you don't.
I want to make that really abundantly clear, because it's another one of those things to me that you see this really unattainable image that's being pumped out over and over again. And I don't want that. I couldn't be more anti that if I tried. Hmm. And I have not had a connection with anybody on social media like I have Vic. As much as there are other people online, I think that, and I think Vic would agree, this industry is pretty shallow, and I don't want to slag it off, because it's also one that I fucking love. I love my job so much.
But you can meet people the hard way. Think that you're going to like them, and then quickly go, oh, they're looking over their shoulder at who's coming in the door.
That's exactly it. And you know what? I think I was so naive when I came into this, and I just thought people were being nice. And I'm not saying that I can't be a bitch. Of course I can be a fucking bitch. I'm a human being. I'm more than capable of doing bad things and horrible things. So I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm, you know, Miss Perfect. But I genuinely enjoy connection with people. I thrive on it. And so if I'm going to meet somebody, it's not because I want to fucking disappear up their ass and get something out of them. It's a genuine connection. And I loathe the fact that this industry, it's very, very difficult to come by. And maybe that's why Vic and I have kind of clung to each other, because it's like, oh my God, you're like me. No, I feel a lot of the time it's very much Vic and I and then everybody else, because it's also that fear
against
of who
the world,
trust.
Baby.
Me and you. It looks fun. I'll come and sit with you.
You're always welcome.
It is weird that it's what you think people's relationships are, and then when you see them in reality and you're like, oh no, that's not it's a strange one. Okay, I've got who's your celeb crush of the year?
Oh my God, I think for both of
we're
us
both the same.
Because have you watched Lady Chatterley's Lover yet?
No.
Oh my lad, get your vibrator ready. Oh my God, what's his name? I've forgotten his name.
Jack O'Connell.
I have a bit of a thing
for ginger bearded men.
He's not like, when you say ginger though, you think of fucking Ed Sheeran, and that
Ed Sheeran is not my vibe.
He's a hint of ginge. He's a bit, I don't know, he just looks a bit rough around the edges, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I love rough. And yet I married Steve, who couldn't be more fucking clean cut.
Yes, so Rob's got a bigger vagina than I have.
clean cut doesn't do it for me, but
yeah, he's not clean cut, mate. No way.
I do Kevin off This Is Us. There was something I know, but he's not my usual type. There was something, I don't know what it was. Maybe
no.
Sorry, guys.
Okay, parenting triumph of the year.
Keeping them alive.
Yeah.
Wait, they're still alive and they're in my care. I guess that's probably a triumph.
I can't think of a single one, mate. Triumph. I mean, you know what? Yesterday I sent Laura a video. It's not my triumph at all, but it was so fucking hilarious. It was Edith's nativity yesterday. Oh. And her singing was like a foghorn. And everyone else was just going, Merry Christmas. And she's like, Merry Christmas! Like that. Like, it was so funny. Brilliant. Everyone was laughing their heads off. So that was pretty, but it's not a triumph, is it? She was just being
hilarious. Yes, it is. That's what it is, because she's confident and she's enjoying
herself. I know, because it's her first nativity. I wasn't sure if she'd be confident or not. And Oliver's never stayed on stage for longer than 3 seconds for every single play that he's ever done, because he's just started crying and had to be taken off. Yeah. But she did. She had a line, everything. She was like so sassy. It was great.
I actually think my parenting triumph was probably the fact that in more recent times I've started doing things with the boys on my own. So which I know sounds silly, but as someone that's recovering from a, you know, mental health crisis from last year, it's major. Yeah. So, you know, the three of us went to London together and we did Longleat together, and just spending that time has been really reparative. Yeah. It's been very needed for them and for me. It's been very precious. Like, well, I've really enjoyed those moments. Yeah.
Well, maybe a parenting realization is that I don't have to do shit with them all the time. Like, we don't have to go to a museum. We don't have to go on a day trip. We have pared back on that so much in the last, like, 6 months. I don't know why. We just have. And, you know, mine are little, they're 3 and 6. So we don't need to do that shit. And what happens is we go and it's actually not worth the stress.
Yeah.
80%
everyone's
of the
crying.
Time. Everyone's crying. And then they're exhausted by the end of the day. And it's just, it descends into hell. Yeah. Whereas if we just keep it local and we, like, honestly, we go on the bus. We don't even go anywhere.
Yeah,
we love that
loop.
Shit.
I know.
We just do
or
a loop.
Train.
Yeah,
like,
that's
the next
it.
Stop and back again. Yeah,
there's a couple of little city farms around here. Go to the farm. It doesn't cost anything. Yeah. And then do that in the morning and then come back and really just letting them play, like, at home. Maybe setting up something if I can be asked, but generally I don't do that because I can't be asked. No. But yeah, just pairing back on feeling like having to do shit with
also,
them all
like,
the time.
I mean, there's lots that 80s parenting probably has to answer for, but we didn't do loads of stuff all the time.
I got drop kicked out of the fucking house by the time it was 8 o'clock, and my mum was like, come back. Sometimes she didn't even say come back at fucking lunch. I actually said the other day, I said about the fact that my boys, like, my next door but one neighbour, they're like, are really, really close friends. And she was like, mate, my kids won't eat these waffles. Do you want them? I said, no, my kids are very particular about the waffles they eat. She was like, what the fuck? She had an art, you know, I was lucky if my mum slung me a bit of toast. I went, mate, by the time I was in year two, I used to get myself up, get myself dressed and get my own breakfast and walk myself to school. And I said, on the one fucking time when my mum did it for me, I started crying because I thought something bad had happened. I cried that my mum made me breakfast. Which makes it sound like I grew up in a really hostile environment. I didn't. It was just very 80s.
Yeah.
Very 80s.
I used to make my own packed lunches and stuff from about 7. Like, and I'm one of 6, but I'm as well. So, but like, you do that. You can do that yourself. I've got a weird parenting moment. So I'd be interested to know if any of your kids have done this. So all of my kids have done this. When they're on the toilet having a shit, they will choose that moment to say, I love you.
Yeah.
And I've heard other people say the same. But recently, Frank, as he's doing it, so he's on the toilet and he said, I just always want to be near you, as he's pooing.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't want to freak you out, but we had a sex therapist on our podcast.
Oh, my God, yes.
And she talked about this because, you know, because they're all boys as well, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, so, no, my middle one's a girl, but she didn't do it so much. It was the boys.
No, it's the boys.
It's
the boys.
It's the boys
thing.
Because their prostate is getting stimulated when they're having a poo.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's like literally releasing sexy, not sexy because they're kids, but like it's dopamine and serotonin.
And they don't know what
it feels
to do with
nice.
It. So
and
she
don't
said
know
about the
it.
Fact that it can, like, they people.
That's how a fetish can start.
That's how fetishes start. Yeah.
So don't wipe their bum as they're saying it, because otherwise they're going to be obsessed with a holes. All right.
And they're going to be obsessed with bum holes and mums.
Unless you're all right with that.
So
bum holes and mums. That's every man ever, isn't it?
Oh my god. Well, I mean. Because he does it to Doug. They do it with Doug
as
well.
It's just that it feels nice. And it's obviously releasing, like, you know, like a nice chemical in his brain.
Oh, well, I wasn't expecting a science lesson today.
Oh, no.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you go.
There's
welcome
that
to
weird
my TED talk.
So when you welcome to my TED talk.
You should. This would be a great TED talk. Okay. Coming to the end. So your biggest lesson of 2022.
Mine relates to having a parent dying and just generally kind of being quite immersed in death and grief, is that I've just seemed to have made this very conscious decision to stop letting fear hold me back. So I've done quite a few things in the last 6 months, especially career-wise, that have absolutely fucking terrified me beyond all belief, to the point where physically, because I'm not very good at dealing with adrenaline, of like being like, I don't actually know how I'm gonna be able to do this, because I think I'm gonna pass out and just do a massive shit piss on the floor mid job. But I've just done it anyway, and like mentally really worked through the fear and just been like, fuck it, just do it. So yeah, that's definitely been something that I've taken away from this year. And I feel like that in all aspects of my life, death's definitely been like, stop worrying about it. Don't let fear hold you back and just do it, baby.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It is that simple. It's the same, exactly the same for me. I think last year. I talk about last year a lot, but it was a massively significant part of my life.
I've read about it and listened to other stuff that you've said about it. You had a breakdown at the beginning of the year that was massive, right?
2021. Yeah, so January of last year, like it was, you know, sort of taken to hospital kind of level bad. And I stopped leaving the house. I was agoraphobic. And I've never experienced anything like it in my entire life. And I've spent 17 months, or I have, I'm just about to go back into therapy because obviously I'm not great out of it, but I've spent 17 months of my life in really, really intense therapy. And I think that if there's one thing that it's taught me is that you've got to step outside of that comfort zone. So I really fucking have. So, you know, the tattoos, the hair coming off and the way I dress changing and, you know, performing my show that I did last month, like that was a...
Which was brilliant.
Huge. I have wanted to do that forever, but I kind of felt like, but I can't do that because I don't have any experience of it. Like I've not gone to drama school. I've not grown up in an environment of other comedians and I've not done the pubs and clubs doing stand-up, so I felt like I can't do this. And then it was very much like no, you just fucking do it. And the opportunity came along and I went, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And I didn't think much about it, and then it was like shit. Like Vic said, it wasn't so much that I wasn't scared. I mean, Vic can confirm, she was there. I was terrified. But I knew for myself I had to step outside of that comfort zone for myself, but also for that person last year. You know, she suffered so much, and I think I'm working endlessly and I will continue to work endlessly to make sure that I never end up back there. And so taking bigger steps to be a little bit more of who I am on the inside and allowing that to be on the outside is kind of like my ethos now, and that's probably been my biggest triumph.
That's massive. You've both had massive years. What do you want for 2023?
A dickload more money.
I thought she was going to say a dick. I was like, yeah, I'll have that. In a woodshed. I'm joking. If you haven't watched Lady Chatterley's Lover, that won't make any sense. But Vic and I are now basically desperate to be fucked in the woods.
By a pheasant keeper.
You can make that happen, can't you?
You know what? I've watched it 3 times this week. It's terrible.
I think 2023, give less shits. Just keep going with the career shit.
I would really love to stop comparing myself and allowing myself to fall down that rabbit warren of believing that I'm not good enough, which I think is really important to vocalize, because when you're on any form of social platform, people will look up to you and think, but if only I get to that, then I'll start loving myself or believing in myself. And I'm still working on it, and I'm where I'm at, you know. For all intents and purposes, I should just take a moment and be proud of myself, and yet I can't be because I don't feel like I've worked hard enough. So I think I want next year, same as Vic, my career mind is like, I'm so focused on my career. It's my passion. It's my love. So continuing to work really hard at that, but also just giving myself a bit of a pat on the back from time to time. I'd like to do that.
So it was me and Laura, basically, we just take it in turns to go on the spiral of self-hatred.
It's like,
hey, tag team, woo! But then the other one supports the other one. It fucking works. And I know Laura said it as well, but for me too, I couldn't survive in this career, I don't think, if I didn't have Laura, because she's like my soul, you know, in all of this. She keeps me grounded, she keeps me sane.
Too late, you already didn't give me, I wasn't your favourite person, so you can't start saying it now.
She's still going to try and compete with the dying dad.
Do you find yourself in the same situation where you struggle with like that self-comparison as a business owner?
Yeah.
What is your psyche around it?
All the time. I think I don't follow as many people as I used to, or I just don't really engage in it. But you get trapped in that thing where you start looking, when you're feeling more shit,
this is what we were saying, you look for it, don't you?
Yeah, and you know that doesn't make you feel any good. I think, yeah, definitely, and with the business, you do compare yourself to what other people are doing, but I think there's something about, again, talking about when you're in that early kid phase and a bit further down the line, I don't compare myself, as a mum, I don't compare myself. So that, taking that out massively helps, like, the generally, because that's a big part of who I am. And then I think it's kind of remembering with the business stuff, I think there'll be people who are doing really well and they're earning millions of pounds, but I don't know what their life's like or what their balance is like or their relationship. Yeah. So I suppose, and this is a bit boring answer probably, but like going like, what is success to me? What does that look like? Because if it's that I will be around and I will pick up my kids from school and I will stay married and all those things, then I need to do stuff that helps that.
Yeah.
Rather than, and that doesn't matter what someone else is doing if that's my focus.
And I want, do you feel like maybe that, I know I shouldn't be doing this because it's not like for me to start interviewing you, but I genuinely sort of intrigued. Do you feel like maybe that mindset changed with everything that happened with Doug, which I didn't realise until very, very recently when I saw your interview, which was really beautiful, by the way.
Thank you. I think, yes. Yeah. That gives you the perspective that you're talking about. Yeah. But like you can't ever shake that. Like you don't have it all the time. So he still does my nut in and I'll moan at him for something really pathetic. We had a row this morning. Like that's all normal. Yeah. But with the big stuff, the big life stuff, I'd say that's life changing. Like to sit next to someone getting diagnosed and he was 30 at the time and I was 29 and I'm pregnant and you kind of like, you're never going to stop having that as a kind of on your shoulder going, why are you stressing about, I don't know, or like why are you putting so much time into the business that you haven't seen your family for 5 days or whatever.
So
I think it does. You can't ever lose that.
I
love that. I'm sure you already follow Laura and Victoria, but if not, links are in this episode's notes. Thank you to Resi for sponsoring this episode. Check them out at resi.co.uk. That's resi.co.uk. Don't forget to have a look at don'tbuyherflowers.com for Christmas gifts if you've not got yours yet, or just any thoughtful gifts all year round. And next week, we've got a final episode of the year, which is a joint episode with Zoe from the Motherkind podcast. And we're each reflecting on three guests from the last year. So I'd love you to listen to that. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, then you'll get a notification when that one goes live next week. And also, if you've enjoyed any of the episodes in the last year, I would love for you to leave a review on iTunes, rate and subscribe, all of that stuff, please. That would be lovely. Thank you. And have yourselves a good week. I hope it's not too bonkers out there.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.